Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Jean-Pierre Verster from Protea Capital Management and independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Good evening, esteemed gentlemen. it's been an interesting, couple of trading days because we had a good week. We sort of celebrated. Now we're sort of like sagging again, and we don't seem to see what the catalyst is. And hopefully, the CPI numbers on Friday for the US are going to show us a bit of direction there. I'll ask you, JP, how did we close today locally, and how are we looking on the US front in terms of markets?
Sure. So I see the JSE All Share closed down just more than 1%. So it was another red day. During the day, we were a bit worse than that. And in the US, I can see that at the moment, the S&P is slightly down, almost unchanged.
Yes.
So not as big movements as we've seen some other days. But we had the GDP numbers today, and that meant that one would think that that's good for locally focused stocks. But they were actually they ended in the red, but they were actually down even worse. And the GDP number that came in a little bit higher than expectation meant that the shares were still down, the local focus shares, but not as much as one would otherwise have anticipated because of that positive surprise from the GDP numbers.
Yes, and of course, we saw our rand, sort of rallying a bit there against, the buck, the big green buck. Yes, and I mean, that's very important to mention because looking at the buck against, Southeast Asian currencies, they're actually weakening against the buck. So, the US dollar is strengthening somewhat. To see the rand actually strengthening further. It's sort of, I don't know, it's good, at least for the soul. Jimmy, what do you make of any of these economic events?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think seeing a bit of rand strength in the turbulent time we're in, particularly with the global inflationary concerns. I mean, we're still seeing concerns out of the ECB. We saw that Germany's factory numbers missed this morning as well by quite a significant amount. And that sort of speaks to the fact that Europe isn't where they want to be from an inflationary standpoint, which could also then mean point to the fact that America, the numbers that we expect to see on Friday might not be what we actually get out. But at the moment, we will take every bit of positivity that we can get. It's good to see that the rand is further away from that 16 rand level, and it'll be interesting to see if we can break below 15 rand because 15.50 was a good support level that we managed to break through now. So it'll be interesting to see if we can push down towards that 15 rand level.
Yeah, interesting. I always look at the rand. It strengthens. Beginning to mid-month, and then when it's time to bring some rands back into South Africa, it strengthens further and then weakens again, which is not good. Let's jump into our questions. This one is from the SMS line. Says, "I'm pleased, at the current surge of Prosus and Naspers, but I've seen this, for the last year or so. What's driving it?" Could it be the potential unbundling as the real driver there? JP?
Well, the shares are down sharply over the last year. It's only, let's say, the last month that you've seen a little bit of a bounce and given back again today. And it's mostly because of the crackdown in China on the big tech shares
Correct.
That has been very negative for the Tencent share price. That has had a knock-on effect on Prosus and Naspers, as well as some of the other bits that we can see within the Prosus portfolio. For instance, Delivery Hero is down about 80% from its highs of last year.
Yes.
Adevinta, which is also a online classifieds business, is also more than halved over the last few months. So the whole portfolio is under pressure. The bits that we can see are under a lot of pressure. And that's why Prosus and Naspers has been under pressure. But the interesting thing is, it has fallen sort of in line to even slightly more than a lot of the listed bits, which means that that discount has widened a bit. So that gives you a bit of a margin of safety that if you buy at this price, hopefully that can act as a bit of a cushion. And I would say that the decrease in the values of a lot of these investments will put more pressure on the Prosus executive management team.
To do
Because I'm
something,
sure the
yeah.
board doesn't like to see this trap of the discount and the underlying shares falling in value. So I'm hopeful that in the coming few months, we could see some corporate action to unlock some of the discount that people have been shouting about and asking for a long time.
Yeah, well, unless if the board is clubby and they're holding hands, you know, singing Kumbaya, saying, this too shall pass. Anyways, you're talking about, you know, the sort of takeaway, you know, industry, which is also, you know, affecting process quite a lot. I mean, if you're looking at, for example, the most recent deal that GitHub did, sorry, not GitHub, Grubhub did, and they're wanting to, you know, unbundle or sell that asset, but if for about seven and they want to sell it for $1 billion and there's no buyers in the market, just tells you what's going on in that market, which apparently has been propped up by a lot of VC money. I want to hear your thoughts there, you know, Jimmy, in terms of, you know, your thoughts, you know, on Prosus and Naspers.
I mean, I agree with what JP was saying, that the shareholders as well at this point are dying for value. And with that increase in that discount, it does present a very attractive opportunity. I think what I also like about where Naspers is sitting in particular is it bounced off of critical support level at 1,500 Rand a share, and it managed to not breach that level, which is a level it hasn't tested since sort of mid-pandemic as well. And while we're seeing that the entire tech space is under pressure, not just locally, yeah, but internationally as well, it's interesting to see that something like Naspers can hold its own. We know that the Prosus portfolio and the Naspers portfolio are still sort of heavily exposed to the Tencent situation and the Tencent holding. And I think an unbundling is much like a stock like Pepco or a stock like Steinhoff, where there are key assets within the portfolio that an unbundling could actually attract more of an investment into. The Naspers board must be considering it and must be looking at it. I mean, we've seen international companies do things like stock splits out of Amazon, and at this point, the tech sector has taken quite a bit of a hit, as I said, locally and internationally. And what you're seeing is the tech stocks are also readjusting and repositioning themselves. And I wouldn't be surprised if Naspers was to follow in that line as well.
Yes, we got a question here. You referred to Amazon just now. This is a question on Twitter from Gamuhel, who says, can you please explain the Amazon stock split? I mean, we've seen, you know, towards the run-up of the share split, Amazon shares were up about 14%. Obviously helped a lot by last week's surge in tech. What did you make of that, JP? And obviously, can you explain, you know, in layman term, what the split entail if you held your Amazon shares at $2,400 or whatever, and now they, you know, you wake up, they're trading at $125?
Yeah, so basically, if we say that Amazon is a cake, then each share is a slice of the cake. And previously, Amazon was sliced in, let's say, 10 slices, and then they slided. No, let's slice those 10 slices further into 20 slices each.
Yeah.
So now Amazon has got 200 slices. So if you previously held 5 slices out of the 10, you held half of Amazon. Today, you hold 100 slices out of the 200. So you still own half a cake, but you now have 100 slices, not just 5 slices. And the same thing with the share split. So your total value is the same.
Thank you.
But per share, the value drops by a factor of 5. Effectively, the math is a bit strange, but you divide it by 20.
Yes.
And your number of shares goes up by 20 times. And if you multiply them out, you get to the same value. So it's just your cake being sliced into more slices.
Yeah, and it doesn't affect the underlying business, which I think that's the most important thing, because now people seeing, you know, I just saw that on the screen, it's trading at 121. They're thinking, oh, something bad must be happening there. And we saw that one executive from the consumer business left. Does this have to do with that? You know, I'm like, no. Let's jump into some local numbers. We have a question here from Greg Salter, who's asking about Signia's result and if, you know, it's still worth holding this thing after these numbers. Jimmy?
Yeah, I mean, after-tax profits were up, basic earnings per share, headline earnings per share up 23-odd%, revenues were up. Critically here, assets under management increased about 6%, and the revenue that they generate from those assets under management was up about 10%. So Signia, definitely still something to be holding. They're doing exceptionally well at this point. It's very... it's very difficult to fault the set of numbers that came out when they look as good as they do. It's also very difficult to pinpoint where the stock is going to stop at this stage. I mean, like I said, they've been able to grow their assets under management, both retail and institutional. And for them, a retail focus, I mean, they've increased their retail assets under management by some 18% between H1 of 2022 and H1 of 2021. So they're doing really well. I mean, they've also reported some 3 billion rand in increase in assets under management between January and June. So they're on the up, they're growing as a business, and they're continuing to do well and continuing to perform really well.
Yeah, so can even see the share price there.
Yeah, from the set of numbers we saw, it becomes very difficult to argue that the grass is not greener on their side.
Look, that's a very strong and loaded statement, and I like it, right? Because I'm going to ask JP here. These guys are more like asset gatherers at this point, and you can see most of the inflows are coming from retail, right? With, you know, the factor that's very important when you're an asset gatherer, which is the factor of momentum, you know, taking a bit of a hit, and we've seen it some of their funds. I mean, like the, you know, Industrial Revolution, whatever, Fourth Industrial Revolution, it's, you know, seeing flames. So is this still a business to hold in this current environment, keeping in mind, you know, the sector, the factor rotation?
I think so. And the reason is, if you think about Signia, I think about it as two businesses in one. The one is big, passive, low fee, and that's also what most of the branding is about. But then also they have what they call the disruptive businesses, which are more thematic in nature, sometimes quite actively managed, like private equity and venture capital. And those are more high fee earning businesses. And they, by having both those businesses, it means if you have different, like you say, factor rotation, and you have the indices versus active management doing better or doing worse, they have sort of hedged their bets in this way, where sometimes it's the passive business that is very big in terms of AUM but small in terms of fees that does well, and at other times it's the more high fee paying thematic type businesses that do well and generate the fees. So because of that, we are a shareholder in Signia, in the Protea funds.
Yep.
I do like the business. I would prefer that they were still directly the manager of the Signia OSI fund, which owns shares in a company called OSI. It's actually since changed its name, but it's the Oxford venture capital firm. And then they sort of started doing their own investments as well on the back of that. And because of that, they then handed it over to the executive chairperson and her partner to manage. I would prefer if that was still managed by Signia. But other than that, I really like the business. We are a shareholder, and I think the prospects look good.
We've got a question here on Twitter from Daylene, who's asking about two companies. We'll start with this one, our views on PayPal. I think that's still a pain point for a lot of people, you know, that got in during the good old days of, you know, lockdowns and COVID, and made a lot of gains. And obviously, you've seen your gains evaporate at this point, Jimmy. What do we do now?
I mean, PayPal was a stock that I gave out as a preferential stock pick sort of March of 2021 to say hold the whole of 2021 through. So you would have seen really good gains for 2021. At the moment, I mean, we're sitting at around $87, which is not where we want to be on PayPal, considering we've come back from almost $320 highs.
Exactly.
It is a very interesting stock, but I think at 87, or I mean between 87 and sort of $60, you're finding that it's starting to look like it is bottoming out in that range. And what you might see is when the tech stocks do start to show signs of recovery, you might see that PayPal might benefit from that. It's difficult at the moment to pick out a bottom for some of these tech stocks, just with the ongoing inflationary concerns out of the US, of course. But I mean, if someone's gotten in on PayPal and wants to get out at this point, it's not something you can really say cut your losses for, because we're coming off, again, off of $300 plus dollars per share. And it's very real possibility that we could see some retracement up to 150 in the near or the interim future. And anyone that gets out at this point could regret doing that. At the same time, I doubt PayPal will go down to zero. The company has still got some good business ideas in terms of where it wants to strategically place the business at the moment. I think the downside or the disadvantage to PayPal, much like any of the other tech stocks that we're seeing, is the huge sell-off that we've seen up to now has been something that, I mean, NASDAQ came from 16,000 points down to 11,000 points. But again, this is relative to having risen from 7,000 points pre-pandemic to topping out at 16,000 points in the pandemic. So I think when looking at whether to assess your PayPal portfolio or put PayPal within your portfolio is to take stock of relative to where you are and how long you intend on holding the stock. Do you get out and cut your losses, or do you hold through the dip and reduce your average buying price perhaps? Take this as an opportunity and see if you go up from there.
Yeah, but Jimmy, what about, you know, opportunity cost for my capital? But anyways, the rhetorical question. JP, PayPal.
PayPal. look, Jimmy's covered it. I would just add to say that it's fascinating. A lot of us, let's take ourselves back a year ago.
Yes.
When we looked at a lot of these growth stocks, these tech stocks,
yeah,
the expectations of growth were just unending. It was an extrapolation of the recent past since COVID, when a lot of these businesses went through a growth spurt. And then from the middle of last year, that was being extrapolated forward. And it took to more or less late in 2021 for market participants to realize you can't extrapolate this growth. It was actually not a momentum story, but a reversion to the mean story. And the business case was also going to revert to a lower mean. And that means the number of transactions you saw on PayPal and Venmo and all the networks that they own was not going to keep on growing at desired rates. They might actually show flattish growth. So the same with PayPal and a lot of these other companies, where a lot of people just got caught out by extrapolating the recent past at a low discount rate, and all of that changed very quickly in the last 6 months.
Yeah, it's I guess it is what it is with PayPal. We shouldn't spend any more time talking about it. Same question from, sorry, another question from Daylin is she's asking about Twitter shares. I mean, you know, there was a good story there, Jimmy, to get us all excited. You know, Elon Musk was going to be a participant. We saw the share price surge quite a lot. It's now below that, you know, where basically Elon Musk, or around where Elon Musk, you know, bought his shares. What does this mean if I'm holding Twitter shares and I was hoping for the best?
Well, I mean, at the moment, we know that Elon's actually come out with some concerns around Twitter, saying that they're possibly withholding data from him, and that could potentially lead him to walk away from the deal. I think we're expecting that if he does walk away from the deal, it will incur some billion, I think about $1 billion in fees or in legal sort of costs there. And what that, I mean, that for him, that's a cost saving relative to what he'd actually pay for the company. But I think just to come back to something that JP mentioned around the fact that where we're seeing activity and where we're seeing people extrapolating what they think is the value or the perceived growth of stocks, you can draw examples from companies like Netflix as well that came out, and we've seen this trend throughout the US's last earnings season, to not want to forecast data and not want to provide data going forward. And Twitter is no different. I mean, they haven't come out to say these are our projected numbers for a particular period and that sort of thing. They've come out to focus a lot on this strategic merger or acquisition by Elon Musk. And if that doesn't go through, you could potentially see that the Twitter stock price could come down a lot lower than where we saw it boost up to off the back of that announcement. We saw a lot of volatility when the announcement was initially made, and then there were some concerns around whether or not Elon Musk could afford it. It turns out he can. And he was able to raise the capital for it. But now if he backs out of this deal, it now creates concerns around whether or not the jump we saw in Twitter is going to be sustained, or whether or not that jump was off the back of the enthusiasm that he might be buying out the share at, or buying out the company at a particular share price.
Look, it wouldn't be so bad for Twitter even if he walked away, because, you know, there's still that breakup fee. JP, do you have any thoughts around Twitter as like an investment case?
Yes, I actually like it at roughly $40 with a takeout price of $54.20. And I think Elon Musk can throw his toys and claim there's more than 5% bots and whatever, but he can't just back out. The $1 billion break fee is not just for when he changes his mind. He's made a legal commitment, and it'll be very difficult actually for him to back out. So at a purchase price of 40 and a sale price of 54.20, that I would say is a probability of more than 50% to be realized, I actually quite like the opportunity at the moment.
Oh, okay, fantastic. It's a nice merger up opportunity there. I've got a question from Tabani who says, hi, may I please have the panel's view on Altron as a buy, JP?
Yeah, I've been scratching my head regarding Altron. I mean, since they unbundled Bytes, it's a much smaller business. And then the CEO, who did a great job in writing the ship and getting Altron back on course, in Teto, he decided not to renew his contract. So Altron is a bit rudderless, and it's much smaller. And I would say it's actually a perfect candidate for merger and acquisition activity. And if they can, I don't know, merge with EOH or together with EOH, get taken over by Roynet or do something, I think the combination of assets between Netstar and some of the other businesses is trading at a very cheap valuation. And it's trading at a cheap valuation because people can see it's rudderless at the moment, it's leaderless at the moment, and that raises some concerns. But given the quality of the underlying businesses and the and how the bits would fit with other players in the general IT market, like I say, whether EOH or Roynet, I actually think that Altron is also an interesting opportunity specifically for merger and acquisition activity that could happen.
Yeah, there could be, you know, the vultures are circling. Any thoughts on Altron, Jimmy? Or should we ask you about Labatt?
We can get to Labatt, but I mean, from on Altron, I think I'm inclined to agree with JP in that you're seeing a lot of strategic realignment from businesses, where businesses with stronger balance sheets have been pursuing more M&A activity and looking to strengthen their portfolios. And Altron does have some residually good assets within its stable after that Bytes sale. So definitely something to be looking at. I think I'd want to first see what their leadership plans are, because they could bring in leadership that wants to take the business in a completely different direction and not agree with what we're suggesting or what we're seeing on our side.
Yeah.
And from that perspective, I mean, the concentration, what they lost out from a Bytes perspective, they did announce that they lost out a significant amount of dividend over the last year from that Bytes sort of disposal, and that we saw reflected in the share price when they did announce those results in the last reporting period. But I still think overall they are something to fairly consider, given that some of the assets within there still represent some good value.
Okay, Jimmy, let's see if we can squeeze in Labatt. Do you follow it, JP?
I'll say for comedic purposes, I sometimes follow it. I mean, they've announced so many times they were going to be involved in so many things. Then it was transport, then it was cannabis. So basically, I'll give the hospital pass to Jimmy.
Look, you know what? Let's just jump straight into our stock picks, because this is not going to end well. Jimmy, what's your stock pick for the evening?
Stock pick is something you and I spoke about last week. It's CrowdStrike.
Fantastic. Why?
Mercedes-Benz might not be winning, but that's not why we're picking CrowdStrike. Good business. Really liking where the business is being positioned at the moment. And it does offer a lot of value for a long-term stock pick. It's not something that I'm looking at for sort of a 3 to 6 month type of pick. I really like where they're positioned in terms of sector. We do know that in terms of the security that they do for cloud solutions and that sort of thing, the more that we look into things around Web3 and things around central bank digital currencies and the security of information from things like the Poppy Act, the more information that goes online, the more the need for that information to be secured
and
protected from things like hacks. And that's only going to be that where we're going in terms of the future. So this is something you could definitely hold long term for a couple of years in your basket. And I'm just really liking where the price is at the moment from a technical level.
Yeah, and it doesn't, you know, I don't see it as a, you know, something comforting to see that you know, privacy breaches have increased north of 337% since 2019 to today. It's an eye-watering number, and it's scary that someone is constantly trying to hack you, even though you can't see it physically. But anyways, JP, what's your pick for the evening?
My stock pick is Woodside Energy, an Australian listed business. It was an Australian liquefied natural gas business, and then they did a deal with BHP Billiton to buy the petroleum assets from BHP Billiton, which are mostly in the Gulf of Mexico, offshore assets.
Yeah.
So today, Woodside Energy is a oil and gas business, and also investing a lot into new energy, renewable energy like hydrogen and solar. And it's trading at a discount to other big oil and gas businesses because in the deal that BHP Billiton did, they unbundled Woodside Energy. But South African shareholders did not get Woodside shares because Woodside decided they don't want to list on the JSE. So South African shareholders got a rand amount, and that's effectively a big block of Woodside shares that will be sold in Australia. And that will fund then a cash payment to South African shareholders. And because of that whole arrangement that everyone knows is a big block of Woodside shares coming to the market, it has kept a lid on the price. And that is why Woodside is much cheaper than other oil and gas businesses. And that creates an opportunity in a world of $120 oil or even higher. I think Woodside is very well positioned.
So fantastic. Woodside there on a great entry opportunity, and a CrowdStrike there to protect yourself from hacks. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks to my guest, Jean-Pierre Fester from Protea Capital Management, and independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha. Stockwatch is back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.